is the Faraway Farm Boy podcast, episode number 3. My guest today is a well-known figure in the Alberta dairy industry. He's been working with farmers for almost 30 years. He's a past president of Alberta Holstein Association. He's a nutritionist at Trow Nutrition in Lethbridge, Alberta. He's a great guy, and he's taught me a thing or two about farming, known on occasion to call me out on stuff. Please welcome Bob Reck. I got with me today Bob Reck and Ben Reimer. How are you guys doing? Welcome to the podcast.
Good. Welcome. Thank you.
So we're just going over our feed samples and what our herd's doing. Bob is my nutritionist, and Ben, you're his newest protege. Is that correct?
Yep.
Sounds good.
Yep. Ben gets to drive around for the next little while and learn all of the fun parts about doing a farm visit and so checking on cows, doing barn walkthroughs, and talking forages.
Right.
So
what were we talking about? We were talking about, the digestibility. Difference from our barley silage last year compared to this year.
Yeah, so looking at the barley silage from this year, and again, we had a little bit of hail on the barley silage this year compared to what we had last year. Mm. So our digestibility, when we're looking at the barley silage right now, compared to the last sample that we had. So if you look at it, your moistures are fairly similar. So we're looking at about a 69% moisture this year on this sample that we had taken. And this one was 71, and this one was around 71. So moisture, again, when we're dealing with a cereal silage, higher moisture, especially when you're putting it in a bag, is beneficial on a cereal silage compared to a haylage. But yeah, so I don't know which piece are we feeding right now.
Was south. It
the south piece? So this is the sample. Again, 69.2 compared to a 68 on our moisture from last year. Our protein from last year, we were sitting at a 14%. This year we're at 12. Digestibility, we're down about 10% from last year, again, on the digestibility. So if you look at your fibers, last year we were at a 24 ADF and a 44 NDF. This year we're at a 30 ADF and a 50 NDF, which gives us a digestibility of 57 compared to 67. So if you look at, and that's your 30-hour digestibility, if you look that into a 240-hour, which would be the same as having that in the rumen for 10 days if the feed stayed in a cow for 10 days, and that's right. the reason for a 240. Last year, 12.8 or almost 13% would still be in the cow, which is your undigestible fiber. And then this year we're at 16. So it's still it becomes fairly digestible. But just not quite as quickly, like in a fast way, as the barley silage from last year. So starch, again, another.
So that's our biggest indicator of quality, right? Starch?
Digestibility, protein, starch, all of that. Starch is the direct energy. So there is energy in digestible fiber also,
right,
Dustin? So if we look at the starch, but starch would be your carbohydrates. We look at our starch from last year, you're only at 9%. And on the dry land where you have to go out and get it before it burns up in this country because you don't have irrigation. Right. Your starch last year was about 9%. This year we're only at 5%, but your sugars are really high. Again, this
so
is
we
an
should
early,
have got on it sooner.
No, I don't think like the heads just aren't developed. There's just not a lot of grain in them. But that's where you get some more energy out of your digestible fibers. So. Huh.
I think we've got way more tonnages here, so.
Yeah, which is good. And that's just going to just give you, again, there's more plant base there and probably less head, and that's why your starch number is going to be lower. But where you are, again, working with that digestible fiber is probably becoming more important to you. So you're growing this more as a grass for the energy than a cereal silage, just because of the dry conditions that you have to grow it in. Yeah. So not the same as irrigation, for sure. So
because we're lower quality than last year, we're going to be looking for some better quality hay. So what are we looking for in hay?
So currently right now, we're using the Garrett hay from last year, right?
Yep.
And our Garrett
Second Cut, I think it's called.
Garrett's hay from last year. Just making sure that I have the right one here. Nice that we test a lot of feeds, and then we...
Yeah.
But you keep them in your book so you know what you're using all the time. So the Garrett hay from last year... actually, that Garrett hay from last year was a very... That was about a 200 relative feed value. So, again, that was a really powerful hay. 24.5% protein. That was a really nice hay that we are using. I think we would want something very similar to this year. Again, with the, looking at digestibility, what kind of fiber we're looking at in there. This is... when you look at a hay sample, so... When we talk dairy quality hay, 150 relative feed value is kind of is a 20% protein, 30% ADF, 40% NDF. That's right. Going to give you that standard 150 relative feed value type of hay. Right. This is only a 27 ADF and a 31 NDF. So again, a lot more digestible, and that's why your relative feed value is going to be running at a 198. So with a higher protein.
Huh. So we really got to. Get the same quality hay again this year.
I think we would be looking for similar, and I think there's been a lot of really good third cut hay put up. Ben and I were out testing some hays this week, and there's been some really good.
What are prices doing? What have you heard?
So prices, some of the people that I'm talking to right now, they're looking at about $1.20 per relative feed value. So if you take
a little bit cheaper than last year, I think.
It's a little bit cheaper because I think there's some around. It'll depend on what we see come out of the third cut crop and
right.
and what guys do up north. But if you take a 150 relative feed value times your $1.20, that's you're talking about $180 in the stack. And then by the time you deliver that, we're looking at another, depending on transportation, $20 to $30 a ton, depending on where you are. So
we shouldn't have to change our textured ration at all, right? So we have our three ingredients. We have the textured ration, the hay, and then the barley silage. We shouldn't have to change the textured ration too much?
Like? We probably won't have to change it too much. Again, we're looking at your numbers. Your MUNs are up a little bit with a little bit lower starch in there. That makes sense because, and maybe that starch isn't as available yet. These were fresh samples that we have taken, so we'll Great. Take the we'll yeah, take a sample that. Again, and just have a better realization where our numbers are. If we needed to add more carbohydrates, whether it's a starch or a sugar, we can add that to the textured feed. So, but the inclusion rate would probably be the same. So, we'll balance it according to the new forages and what we get now. So,
great, and that should give us a better idea of what's going on with our MUNs.
Yeah.
And MUNs were about 13.
Is that where they are today? So we can...
It's kind of bouncing around a bit, too.
Yeah, I think I just had them up here a little while ago. So your average MUNs for the month of August were 12.4. Again, that's there's nothing wrong with 12.4. It's just economically, where can we get the most production and the best value for the feed that we're putting into the cows?
Yeah, for sure.
So... I got on some positives. So if you're looking at the month of August, your average butterfat was 4.47 in the summer with the heat.
Yeah.
That's been really, really good. Protein on the cows at 3.15. Again, if you look at your that's been good. Your LOS at 5.86. And then what Ben and I were talking about this morning, like, for having a bedding pack here to have somatic cell average in the month of 118,000, you're doing a really good job of managing your somatic cell on a bedding pack with the cows.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
There's lots of bedding every day.
Obviously, you're paying attention to it, so doing a good job there.
Cool. What's our repro for... So you got basically a, what do we call that, herd efficiency report,
right? Well, it's a report card, and we do this. This would be from our July 16th test, and then going back into We do have the August test, and we'll update that on the next time. So it's nice to do a report card where we're looking at each month. So if you look at how many cows you were milking, and this is according to your DHI. We also look at the Alberta Milk. But the cows that you're milking, 35 cows, which is 83% of your herd. They're in July, they were averaging that 37% on, or 37 kilos on test day at 185 days of milk. So that was down a little bit from where we were in June. So, and again, now coming through the heat, we're sitting around about that 33 liters.
Yeah.
So that's really kicked them. But
yeah.
If you look at the fat on DHI, and sometimes they can be different because of the way that we're testing. The fat in the bulk tank is what you get paid for, right?
Yeah.
So
we always have this. It's way lower on DHI than it is in the bulk tank.
So the thing that you have to remember when you're doing a DHI butterfat test is...
He worked for DHI for 15 years, you know that?
Yeah. So the thing that you can remember about the DHI butterfat compared to your bulk tank butterfat is it's only going to be one milking. It's a percentage per kilogram of milk on, that's what you're going to get your fat on. And with your bulk tank, that's a blend of four milkings of all of your cows. So you could have a high fat cow that's contributing a lot more to the bulk tank. And it could be just even the way that you're taking the sample, blending that milk sample. Enough agitation before you take the sample too. So other things, again, we're going back into repro. You're running a preg rate of 14% right now. If we look at that over the year, it's staying pretty steady in between the 14 and 15%.
So that's not that great, and that could go up.
And that's something that we talked about, that really comes down to heat detection and your voluntary wait period. When you're milking 35 cows, your average numbers get skewed pretty fast compared to 100 cows.
Because
one cow will make a bigger number change on that percentage. I think you and I have already talked about this a lot. So you should be a guy managing 1,000 cows, not 35 cows. So.
Just waiting for the checks to come in.
Yeah. So your average days open is fairly high at 160. So could you breed your cows back a lot quicker? You could, but at 37 kilos of production, maybe some of those higher producing cows, we want to wait a little bit longer till that 80 to 100 days to start breeding them.
So we've been as high as 18 or something on the preg rate?
If I go back...
I was just looking at that chart there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, if I go back over a couple years, they definitely have been higher. When we first started keeping track of the data, I think it was something you were paying a little bit more attention to. As you have your own heifers now, I think you're just letting some of those higher producing cows wait a little bit longer on that voluntary wait period.
So,
yeah. But there's no issue with that. Again, that's just comes down to management and where you want to be.
Right, yeah.
So
that's kind of a glimpse at how the overall herd's doing. So that's pretty cool.
So this is the sample that we're using today. Did you have any other questions on that? We can update. We did the shaker box today too, and before we started on the podcast here. That has been, we'll do that usually every visit when we come out and do the farm walkthrough, and that was still very consistent. I was teaching Ben here and talking about the numbers, and I think you're doing a good job. But your ingredients really don't change that much. So
right, yeah. And well, we learned that our chop length was good on the new silage. That's pretty much all we kind of learned, right?
Okay.
Right. Well, as far as a shaker box goes, we didn't really learn too much about the quality of the feed, just kind of the shape and size.
Exactly. Yeah.
But.
What was the chop length? Do you know what you did this year?
Same as last year.
Okay.
Inch and a half or whatever it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so we went through our herd. But I want to hear more about Bob.
What do you want to know about Bob?
Well, I want you to tell your story. Tell your story in full detail. Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Ontario. My mom.
Ugh.
Don't go. Ugh. So my born on a just it was more of a hobby farm that my mom and dad had in Ontario.
Whereabouts in Ontario?
St. Thomas area, which is by London.
Okay.
My dad actually worked at the Ford Motor Plant. That's what he did shift work at a Ford Motor Plant, so on an assembly line. And when I was 10 years old, I was the oldest of four kids. My dad decided that he wasn't spending enough time with his family, working shift work and having four young kids, and decided to sell everything that they owned in 1975 and move to Alberta. There was a lot of people moving to Alberta at the time. So they sold everything that they had. And
they know anyone here?
Did not know anybody here. We took, he bought a fifth wheel trailer and a truck, and everything that we owned fit into that. And that's how we moved to Alberta. We took 3 weeks to travel across Canada.
You moved to Rimby?
He didn't know where he was moving, so we drove all over Alberta. didn't know where he was going to live. He actually went to the farm labor pool when we got to Alberta and started looking for a job on a farm. And he became just a farm worker on a big grain operation around the Stettler area.
And you guys found a house?
The farmer had a house that we could live in. Yeah, but my dad had to make all of our own furniture, like our beds and all of that. Didn't really have a lot of pot to piss in at that time. It was a good way. We never had television or nothing. So really good family life because...
How many siblings you say you had?
I have three siblings. Okay. So, yeah. Good family life. After being there for about a year...
Where was that?
Stettler.
Stettler, okay.
Stettler. My dad decided to... actually, he really liked dairy. That was something that he wanted to try to do. And he went out and bought his first 10 cows. He bought 10 cows.
How old was he when he did that?
Oh, so that would have been 76. My dad would have been 30. If I was...
Late 30s or something?
Yeah, it would have been later 30s.
Huh.
Yeah, or early, mid-30s.
That's brave.
Would have been brave. But 10 cows, you didn't need quota at that time, but he went into a partnership with a guy that had some quota. So he took his 10 cows, went into a partnership with another gentleman that was milking about 60 or 80 cows at the time, and took his 10 cows and milked that guy's cows and did the management of the farm and to start building up the quota, because they were giving away a graduated entry quota at that time. He did that for about half a year, and then that partnership fell through. My dad felt he was doing more of the work than what he was getting benefit for. So, we ended up taking our 10 or 12 cows, whatever we had out of there, and went on and joined another gentleman in a partnership.
Okay.
That my dad got into, and worked with him for about another year and a half. And this ended up being out in the Bowden Sundry area.
Okay.
Where we were. Ended up getting into another partnership, starting to build up his herd. That partnership went a little bit better. And in 1977, my dad had an opportunity to buy his own dairy farm. So he took those cows, bought his own dairy farm.
Still up with 10 cows?
He was probably up to 15 or 20 at that point.
Okay.
And then we got up into the Rimby area. And that's where he bought his first herd, and we were milking 100 cows in a stanchion barn at that time. So with buckets, bucket milkers, manual barn cleaning like by hand, and pasturing our cows,
How many acres?
On one quarter section.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was enough feed, or you could
bought in a lot of feed.
Of course, you were probably 10.
I was 12 years old by then. Yeah. So. 12 years old, but doing a lot of the work.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, you were the right height, right?
This is the right height. Actually, do you know what? We milked, out of those 100 cows, my dad had four surge buckets, so those were the ones with the belt on them.
Right.
And he would milk with those four surge buckets. We had a step saver, so you'd milk the cow into the bucket and empty the bucket into the step saver, which would have a line into a vacuum tank.
What's a step saver?
I'm sure
I've seen one, but...
It hooked onto a 1-inch glass pipeline, and it was a vacuum tank, and you would pour the milk into there, and the milk would get sucked into the milk tank. Okay. So you didn't have to walk it all the way to the milk tank and dump it in.
I thought it was that chair that you strapped to your...
Well, that was called a milking stool, but that's okay. Yeah. And I got to use a DeLaval bucket, so we had the four surge buckets, and my job at 12 years old was to milk with the DeLaval bucket because it had a claw that came out from the bucket, and I milked all the lower uddered cows. Oh, and that was my introduction in being a milk cow guy, so dairy guy.
That started your passion for DHI at a young age.
Started my passion for dairy at a young age, yeah. Getting kicked in the head and milking cows and, all those early mornings before school and after school and all of that. So yeah, my dad actually got a, when I graduated high school in 1983, I wanted to work at home. He was still milking cows, and he said, you should go out and try some other things, work for other people, see what that's about and before you decide this is what you want to do. So I went out. I had my own relief milking business from the time I was 16, knew a lot of neighbors, did a lot of relief milking.
What did the neighbors have for parlors? Or
everything was the same back then, and there was a lot. There was parlors. There was guys with buckets. There was a little bit of everything. Mm. That was all pretty standard back in those days. Back in the early 80s, there was still 2,000 dairies in Alberta, compared to the 500 that we have today. Yeah. So everybody had 40, 50 cows.
And you're right. Yeah.
So. It was easy to milk cows. So I went out and took my green certificate with another farmer so that I could learn my AI and all of that, and ended up being a herdsman for a guy up in the Wetaskiwin area. For
shout out to that guy.
Peter Van Summeren, yeah. No doubt. He gave me a lot.
Are they still milking? Or?
No, he sold out quite a few years ago, too. So, yeah. But, yeah, as a herdsman, you got to do the field work and but milking the cows. Again, it was another stanchion barn, it was a pipeline system, so no buckets. Didn't have to worry about the bucket part.
Huh.
So was there for about 3 years, and then... And then did all of my green certificate, level one, level two, dairy and mechanics, level one. And then in 1990.
Is that still relevant? Like that was relevant at the time where you could tell people, hey, I got my green certificate or whatever?
Do you know what? It was the government paid for it back then. They paid for part of the employees' wages, so it was a good way for farmers to get some assistance to pay for a hired man. Now they do it in the school system, so you can get credits for it in school now.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very relevant. It's like an apprenticeship on a farm, whether you want to get into dairy, beef, irrigation, anything like that. So,
I just find that, if you have more experience, it weighs more than... if you have a green certificate type thing.
Yep.
But, yeah.
But, so, experience then, by taking green certificate, you were working. So
yeah.
So, you were gaining experience, right? So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And the farmer would test you, so you would go through your modules all of the time.
Yeah,
he would test you, and then you would get tested by other farmers later. And it was a great program for me. My ultimate goal at the end of it was to go home and take over the family farm and have all of this knowledge that I learned from somebody else. Because even though your dad can teach you a lot of stuff, you do learn a lot from other people,
too. For
sure,
yeah, I know that.
So. Yeah. By the time I was all done that, my dad had decided that he was getting out of the business and sold the cows and quotas, so there was nothing to come home to. So
what did you feel at the time? Was that just,
do you know what,
where things went type of thing?
I was sitting in that 18, 20-year-old age, right? So I don't know if I would have been ready to take over the farm yet either. Looking back on it now, I have no regrets.
You weren't thinking about cows all day long?
Was that with all the jobs that I've had, so I've apprenticed as an electrician, I've done a welder's helper on the pipeline. Those jobs didn't last more than 6 months, and I always wanted to get back into...
So those came after that then?
Yeah, there was a little stint in there, little spots in after high school where I tried some other things, but always sucked back into the dairy business. So.
Yeah, same here. Just kind of always... It's easier to do it because that was your skill set, right?
Yeah. So then, my mom and dad sold the farm. They moved down to the Lethbridge area. That was been in the end of the 80s. In 1990, wanting to be closer to your parents again, I decided to move back down to Lethbridge. And that's when I apprenticed as an electrician for the first little while when I was here. But then DHI kept calling. I ignored them the first time. The second time, I actually went for an interview and ended up getting a job with them in September of 1990.
Was it bigger then than it is now?
No, it's actually grown probably a little bit more. Alberta's always been strong in milk recording. I think we've had a lot of uptake. There's always been a lot of people that wanted to get into it. If I look back on the milk recording in southern Alberta, milk testing, Yoss Hybrids was the first farm that I milk tested at in down here. We were talking about it last night. Even Deerfield Colony was the first colony that I put on test because they started in 1991. But milk recording was a lot of fun. I enjoyed getting up in the morning and going out and visiting with farmers and learning about their cows and being part of their operations, and did that for 16 years.
And all around southern Alberta? Or
all around southern Alberta. I milk tested consistently from 1990 to about 1997, 98. Twice a day, every day, getting up at some 2 o'clock in the morning to go to some of these Hutterite colonies. And then in 1997, we started with Dairy Comp 305.
Okay.
And I became an installer for Dairy Comp 305. And so my travel got a little bit more with DHI and started installing, doing interfaces in all of Western Canada. So anywhere from Manitoba all the way out to BC.
What's the northernmost farm you did?
Peace River, the Lavoie. So, yeah.
Are they still?
Yeah, they milk about 400 cows. It's a pretty big operation up there. So, yeah. But those are fun experiences to get out on farm and meet. You meet different people all of the time. So I've had an opportunity. I tell everybody, I think I've been to more than 50% of all the farms in Alberta and quite a lot of farms in all of Western Canada. So, and met great people in the whole industry.
But this one stands out the most.
This one stands out the most. It's a highlight of my day. Uh-huh. Always, so.
Yeah. Year.
Yeah.
And then you met your wife sometime in there too?
Let's see, when did I, that would happen.
At so, church.
Probably not at church, but after we had our kids, and then we got married in a church, so we did good there, and then then we started taking, we did go to church, so. I met my wife in 1993, so started in DHI with 1990, met my wife in 1993, met her in 91, we got married in 93, and... Yeah, I have two kids, Brandy and Tyler, that one born in 90, Brandy was born in 95, Tyler in 97. With DHI, again, when I was milk testing, I was home all the time. That was really good. I was home all the time. When I started with the Dairy Comp stuff and getting on a plane, going to BC, spending a week out there installing Dairy Comps or being gone in a hotel or whatever, when my kids were 8 and 10, I felt like I wasn't spending enough time with them.
Yeah.
So I made the tough decision. I really loved what I was doing with DHI, but made the tough decision for my family to come home and spend a lot more time. So I chose the feed business. I didn't ever think I would get into the feed business, but Unifeed was probably one of the companies that were dealing with a lot of the dairies at the time. I went to Larry Penner, who I had known forever. Who's still my boss today. Him and Raylene and I all came to Lethbridge area in 1990. They were working for Unifeed at the time, and I worked for DHI. I asked if they were looking for another person to go up and deal with the dairy guys. And Larry was...
Deal with them. You need a certain type of person.
Yeah, well... and Larry was getting more into the beef stuff, so, and I really, and it was nice. He gave me a whole bunch of accounts, and a lot of those guys had a lot of patience with me because I knew a lot about the dairy side of things, and when it came to the nutrition, it was going to be some learning that I had to go through, but
yeah,
I think if you understand cows and the dairy, and I work with a lot of good customers, mm-hmm. that they really give you a lot of... help and patience along the way. And that's where, so I've been now there for 14 years, started there in 2006. Huh. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So where do you pick up, obviously over 14 years or whatever, but you were talking about our carbohydrates and all that stuff. Like, I can't keep track of all that stuff.
So there's, you just
pick it up here and there. And
so no matter what feed company you're working for, there's always going to be training through your feed company working right. with the...
So back in the 90s, they probably didn't do that much training or what?
Well,
just kind of...
Every company, there was a lot of training. There's a Western Canadian Dairy Seminar, which has been going on forever.
Oh.
So there's lots of that. There's, I work with Raylene Beamer, and like Raylene knows, she's been doing nutrition
Sorry.
For a long time. And for her and I to sit down and have the same conversations that you and I have.
You probably got it all memorized at this
point. I learn by getting asked questions. So
right.
when somebody asks you a question, you have to go find the answer.
Yeah.
And then the next time somebody asks you that question, you already have the answer. So
yeah.
I was just telling Ben that. Ben just started with us, yesterday? So I said, you're going to get asked the questions. That's how you're going to learn things as you go, too. So
yeah.
And we have good training, online training and research available. I think it's a lot easier now with the Google.
The interwebs.
The interwebs.
And for the most part, we have the same problems, dairy farmers all around type thing, right?
Most people have
They're
the
not.
Same problems or will come across a problem that somebody else has have. And I was saying that I can learn as much from you as you can learn from me, because you're going to ask me those questions. And then when the next guy asks me that, I can take that to the next place and we can learn from each other. So
I felt I've learned a lot more. I don't think you've learned as much from me as I've learned from you. But that's part of starting out, right? Just at the beginning, I had no clue what you're doing, right? So.
But you got to do something I never got to do, and that's have your own dairy farm, right?
Uh-huh.
So, and you had to start somewhere, and you had to build all of that up, and yeah, no, you. I think you've done a great job with what you've done.
Oh,
I think
thanks.
It's quite impressive, actually. So, yeah.
So that brings us back to today. So 14 years you've been selling feed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nutritionist is your full title.
Yeah.
Well, so what's next?
What's next?
Yeah.
Retire.
You're not going to retire ever.
I'm never going to retire.
I won't let you.
I really enjoy this. So what is next? And I've gone through this with Lots, and we have Ben here today too. But my next is to teach people like Ben and bring people like that into the business and help. Like, dairy farming is going to be around for a long time. You're going to have to feed cows. We want to get better at it. We want people to be efficient and make money doing this. So training the next bunch of people that are going to help all of our producers. So
yeah,
people like yourself that are going to be in it. Same as what you're going to do, I guess, with your kids and pass it on. But
mm-hmm.
We're always going to need that help in this industry. So, and to be profitable.
So that's what's next for Trow. But what's next for Bob?
That's next for Bob.
No, Bob's not Trow. Come on. You're into ice fishing a bit.
You'd like to go
ice fishing way more than you do.
If you want to talk golfing, ice fishing, and hockey, yeah. So, yeah, golfing, fishing, hockey, probably in those. Well, yeah, hockey might even be ahead of fishing now, but I did get out fishing a little bit. Golfing for sure for me is a dirty habit or a fun habit, but I can do that at early in the morning and still have time to work.
Oh, yeah, right, so. Yeah. You're one of those people that goes out in January.
But, yeah. Well, my wife just went back to school, too, so she wants to have a little bit of a career for a while, so I'm going to be working for a day.
Good to know.
Yeah.
So, what's next for the dairy industry, you think, during these unprecedented times?
I think there's a lot of confidence still in the dairy industry. If you and you can look at that even by looking at the quota prices that are around. So guys still have confidence that this industry is going to be around, or they wouldn't be spending the money on it. There's a lot of new barns. You're going to see a lot more automation. Robotics are becoming quite popular now. Well, we got about 25% of the herds.
And cheaper. So.
It's different labor, right? Because I think that's
all. No, I mean the robots in general.
The robots are, and they're getting way better.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, if you would have asked me 15 years ago, I think robots would have been the worst way to go. Today, they're very efficient and milk cows in a good way. Gives you more freedom in your lifestyle to be a dairy farmer, do some other things, and know that your cows are getting milk that 2.5 to 3 times a day or whatever that's going to be. So better for the cows, because our Holstein cow is given a lot more milk than she ever was before, and we're going to continue to improve that cow, and they're going to keep doing that. So
how much were your cows given when you were 15 in a stanchion barn?
Probably an average, and we would look back at then, the top herds were 50 pounds, right? That was a 50-pound average herd, was a good herd back then. Yeah. So, now we're seeing herds getting close to double that, where we're looking at our top herds.
What have you seen change with genetics? Like, were they all nice-looking cows, or...?
No. Back then, I think the genetics have come a long ways, and right. with classification and knowing that, I think people are paying a lot more attention to that. You're seeing a lot of AI where you would have seen a lot more natural breeding back in those days. So, I think genetics have come a long way, so...
Yeah, I was just thinking last night, we had our what do you call it? Green Acres Holstein Club.
Barn Cow
Award Night.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
See Mike show that nice. What was that? What was the award for that one that he was showing? Futurity? Or
The Futurity Award?
So what does that mean?
Yeah. So on their Futurity Award, so they actually have animals that they start showing at a very young age.
So I should say that you're past president, right?
Past president of Alberta Holstein. Right. So actually the only person that's never been a dairy farmer to do that. So I'm pretty proud of that. So I started with the Green Acres Holstein Club in 1992 as a member. I became, I did all their awards and all of that, became the president of the Green Acres in 2006, and then ended up joining the Alberta branch in 2009. I was there it might be even earlier than that. I was there for 12 years on the provincial board. So
that's kind of cool to see that you're kind of, it's not just you self-feed as a job type of thing. You're kind of, you know, and yeah, it's actually an issue with dairy farmers where we're too involved in our work, right? Like it becomes us.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side of it, you know, you're kind of vested interest just like us when you kind of, you know, you're put an effort into being president of the club or whatever. It's kind of cool to see.
Well, I'm passionate about the dairy industry. Yeah. And like I said, this is, there's a lot of good people. And I know everybody. I'm seeing the next generation. So, I want to see it improve. And that's what I feel confident in the dairy industry and what we're going to see. And the genetics part, the show cows, the type E cows, that's always been a fun part for me to go in and see in those cows. So
you were going to explain what the futurity.
So what happens on the futurity is when you start showing a young animal as a calf, you bring her back as the next year. So now we're calling it the future. So if she makes it to the next year, how does she place the next year? And then how does she place by the time she milks? So it's an animal you show as a young animal, and then you show again in the future after she calves to see how she would rank against those same animals in her class that were shown as calves, and again, how they milk.
So Mike had shown that animal before?
They would have shown that animal as a young animal. In the Barn Cow Award, and then they shown her again.
And as last a future, night she was a first lactation
animal as a milk cow. Yeah.
Did he say what she scored?
She scored 82. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So 82. She was 240 days of milk or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun last night.
It was kind of nice in the COVID times to actually get out.
Yeah, we were all 6 feet apart.
Good.
And wearing masks and biohazard suits, but no, it was fun.
There you go.
But anyways, we've been sitting here for a while, so I'll let you go. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Bob Reck and Ben Reimer. Thanks.
Thanks, Dustin.
Thank you for listening to the Faraway Farm Boy podcast, episode number 3. Join me again next week.